This is Packer and Durham on ACCN and Sirius XM Channel 371.
Mark Packer in the home at the basement and back there at his home in Cartersville, Georgia, be Wes Durham. Wes, good morning. What's up?
Hey, Pack, I'm great. Good to be with you. Looking forward to the show today and a big night of basketball in the ACC where a couple surprises, or at least one, I think. NC State, a nice road win, and Wake Forest, an impressive performance against Florida State last night, huh?
Yeah, and Virginia returns the favor with Clemson. And, of course, you had the Duke-Georgia Tech game. There's three games tonight as of right now that are scheduled to be played on the men's side, which we'll get to. Luke Hancock's going to join us to break all this stuff down next hour. We look forward to that. We'll take calls, as I mentioned, at 844-SAY-ACCN. But a little bit of everything. You know, keep harping on the fact that are we going to get some folks that finally kind of take ownership and start putting together wins back to back to back? I thought the one thing we saw last night in the league, Wes, were three teams coming off a COVID pause with Virginia Tech, Duke, and Clemson, that quite frankly, I thought all three of them struggled at times. I mean, really physically struggled at times, and which is not surprising. It's kind of par for the course.
Yeah, I thought in the ball game last night in Durham, I thought Duke was incredibly rusty for about the first 9-10 minutes of the first half and never really seemed to have any offensive rhythm. And that's one of the things that, as Corey pointed out last night, Coach K spent a good bit of our visit 2 days ago talking about his concern about their conditioning and their conditioning, not just physically, their conditioning from a mental perspective. And I thought you saw some of that last night for sure. I think the other thing, too, is that this is going to be pretty volatile now. Outside of the Blue Devils, who clearly are prepared to make a run for the big prizes we've talked about, I think the other thing is there's a lot of, I don't know if we want to call it glob, we can call it glob, but there's a lot of stuff in the middle there that's going to be unpredictable, and we saw some of that last night. I think you're right about Virginia Tech coming off the pause. I thought NC State had came out with a lot of enthusiasm and a lot of energy early last night in Blacksburg. That proved to be really interesting. And you know what? Virginia, Pack, statistically, the Cavaliers shot it well. Mm-hmm. I mean, they just started shooting it well in the second half. And if Virginia's going to shoot it well, unlike they did when they played December 22nd against Clemson, more than likely they're going to have a chance to win the ball game.
There's no doubt. We're going to address all these games that took place last night. Again, kind of preview what's going to come up tonight as well. But you had Duke-Georgia Tech. And, you know, I'm just going to throw something out there. I said it yesterday. There are a lot of folks that are not aware of the infamous ACC index card. And we provided that information yesterday. And as I've told you, when this thing was created 20-some-odd years ago, on radio, I said, I'm not going to form an opinion. I'm just going to give you the numbers. Duke shot 40 free throws last night. Georgia Tech shot 12. We have had now seven ACC games, conference games, in which there's been a discrepancy of double figures from the free throw line. The biggest number prior to that game last night that you were calling, Wes, was at Miami and Wake Forest, where the discrepancy was 19 free throws. It was 27-8. Last night, the discrepancy was 28. Now, again, style of play, there's a trillion things that go into this. And I'm not telling you or giving you a pointing the finger. I'm just telling you what the numbers are. 40-12 from the free throw line. That's a big number for a game, in my opinion, that was, what, a six-point game? 5 minutes ago in the ball game, give or take?
Yeah. I think so, after Georgia Tech made the run. Now, there are two factors that go into this last night. Number one, Duke was going to go inside because Georgia Tech, quite frankly, does not have an established presence inside. There's no Moses Wright. There's no Ben Lammers.
Right.
No James Banks from a couple of years ago. Rodney Howard did not play for a second straight game last night. Saba, Gigi Berea is not ready for major minutes. Jordan Mecca is a 6'8 sophomore who needs more basketball experience, needs to be more physical in terms of playing the post. So Mark Williams and Paolo Banchero were going to be a factor last night inside for Duke, and they were in the ballgame. Both registered double-doubles in the game. I thought A.J. Griffin came on and also provided an inside presence. Georgia Tech, in order to stay in that ballgame last night, was going to have to hit threes. They were going to have to hit perimeter shots, take care of the basketball. They have no answer, Georgia Tech does, when it comes to the inside presence of Duke last night. And then the other aspect about this pack is you get a lot of reaching in games like this where you're trying to steal a possession back if you lose one. And I think we saw some of that last night. This is a 23-21 game or 24-21 game last night when the and-one lob from Michael DeVoe to Jordan Usher didn't get executed the right way. So there was a lot of that that contributed to the foul discrepancy, especially at the free throw line. And the game got chippy. I mean, Duke puts a presence on it. Duke is a physical contact defensive basketball team, always has been. And that also showed its teeth a little bit last night as well. Not that Duke was chippy or Georgia Tech was chippy, but the reaching and the stuff like that and the challenging, that got frustrating, I think, for Georgia Tech when the score was in double figures in the second half.
What was going on with DeVoe and Kay? What was your take?
I have no idea. All I know is that Michael did say after the ball game, in his media comments that, he's a competitor. He got, maybe it got to the best of him, that kind of thing. He also said he grew up a Duke fan. Obviously, whatever he said, Coach K didn't like it. I think Corey said that message might have been communicated to the team. I have no idea what was said last night, but it fired up the Hall of Famer, didn't it?
Oh, there's no question about it. The first thing that popped in my head with all of that is an old school reference of Dean Smith and Ike Iturbe, right? You don't talk to my guys, and all of a sudden Rick Barnes and Dean Smith are nose to nose at midcourt in the ACC tournament, and I thought the whole Coliseum was going to explode.
Right.
But it's the old adage, hey, you coach your team, I coach mine. But there was a little barking going on. Like you said, that game had a little edginess to it. And but that was the first thing that popped in my head watching that last night was, oh, here we go. And, never know.
It crossed my mind. I can tell you that. It crossed my mind last night. I thought for a minute, I said, now, wait a second. If we go to timeout, are we making a business decision here? We don't want to keep this camp. I thought for a minute, you know what? We might want to stay here, see what happens. But you're right. It was interesting for sure last night. But apparently, after the game, there was a pleasant, seemingly pleasant handshake, heat of the moment type deal. So I think both are happy to have it move on, if you know what I mean.
Yeah, I think you're right. But I was thinking, depending on who was on the other side, if that was a Geno versus Muffet moment, that could have gotten little midcourt, eyeball to eyeball, Barnes versus Dean Smith, but we didn't get that. But there was a moment, if you were watching the game last night, and when that happened, I guarantee you, whether you're on the couch or sitting on your bed or whatever, you perked up and you went, whoa, 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 what's going on here now? Mm-hmm. Because it did have that edge of, hey, wait a minute now. That's totally out of character for all parties involved. But cooler heads finally prevailed, and Duke prevailed. They were the better team last night. And like you said, they knocked the rust off of it. But I think we saw that. If you watched a lot of hoops in the ACC last night, everybody coming off a COVID pause, I thought, looked a little out of sorts. And that's kind of natural. Mm-hmm. We've seen that now across the board, whether we're talking about ACC hoops or anybody else.
Pack, I thought the other big game last night was what NC State did in Blacksburg. And I know Virginia Tech's coming off a pause. But look, I mean, we've mentioned Darion Sebron before. But Sebron is a thing now. This is going to be a thing. I mean, he was 21-10 last night, over 50% from the floor. Terquavion Smith gave him a great boost as well. But look here. I mean, this is where this league, I think, is going to be. Outside of that top spot, it's going to be a little survival of the fittest here. And, I thought Sebron was fantastic again last night.
Well, the game had such crazy ebbs and flows. Again, if you watched the game, if you didn't, I'm going to help you. State jumps out to like a 10-point lead. They're up like 29-19 near the end of the first half. And then the Hokies go bonkers. They go on a 17-0 run at the end of the first half and into the early part of the second half. And now they're comfortably ahead. And then NC State goes on a 13-0 run to go up by whatever it was, six And then the Hokies went on a 9-0 run to take a one-point lead. And you're like, holy mackerel, can anybody win this game? But I thought NC State down the stretch was really, really good, Wes. And we've seen them not do that in games past. And the flip side now, big picture, Virginia Tech hoops for the men, kind of like Virginia Tech football. Can they win at home? What is going on in Blacksburg? I mean, we went through a football deal with the Hokies at home, and now all of a sudden – Wake Forest is rolled in there, won by 19. NC State rolls in there and wins the game. Again, I think this is a really good club at Virginia Tech, but they are 0-3 in the league, along with Georgia Tech. And, of course, Pitt's 0-2. They played it on against Louisville. They could be 0-3 by tomorrow morning. So, you know, you don't want to put yourself in that kind of hole, especially given everybody's non-conference. But Virginia Tech, I think, is one of the teams that we would all agree that we expected them to be, you know what? One of those upper third teams in the league, but at 0-3, man, they better find it pretty quick here, Wes. You can't find yourself all of a sudden wallowing around in the middle of January going, man, we're in the cellar down here. How are we going to get this thing turned around? So that was a big loss. Again, winning at home, holding serve. We emphasized it yesterday. Home teams last night go 2-2.
Well, here's the thing about where Virginia Tech is as well. Remember now, they lost postponements at Carolina and at home to Pittsburgh in the last 12 days or 13 days. Now they have to wait a week before they go to Virginia. And Mike Young's team is 8-6 and 0-3 in the ACC. And they are too talented to have that kind of record. But nonetheless, that's where a lot of teams are right now in the ACC. So, at Virginia, then Notre Dame at home, and then a return with NC State. So there you have it. I mean, that's a pretty salty little road. And then you go to Boston College 3 days later. So, I mean, everybody's going to have this rotation. But for Virginia Tech, my concern is, Pac, as you mentioned, the home schedule. Got to pick up a couple home wins. And then the other thing is you got an eight-day break right now. You just came off a break, and you're getting ready to have another break of a week before you play again.
You know, here's the other thing, too, when you try to schedule and look down what teams have coming up. If it doesn't have the word Duke in it, you don't know who you're going to play. I mean, there's nobody really separate. I mean, again, no disrespect to Louisville. They're undefeated. Miami's undefeated. They've gotten off to a great start. But when you kind of look down schedules and you see the cluster of three or four teams coming up, you're like, well, they're all kind of, you know, is Virginia hot? Because they're starting to make shots. I mean, do I want to play them? I don't know yet about this league. I know about Duke, but, you know, it was really high in Virginia Tech. They've gotten off to a really sluggish conference start. Maybe Miami's the surprise. Louisville's getting their act together. Like I keep saying, the interesting part to me of this league this year is not necessarily what Duke's doing, because we know they're elite, but who can manage and start putting together wins? And you look at the schedule tonight, North Carolina, Notre Dame. Somebody's walking out of South Bend thinking, you know what? We're on a good run because Notre Dame's starting to put together and North Carolina looking to win another one on the road. Maybe it's North Carolina that's getting their act together after that crazy game against Kentucky. Syracuse, Miami. I mean, the Canes keep playing home games and all they do is win, and it counts. Syracuse has to find a W on the road after letting that Virginia game get away from them the other day over the weekend. And Pitt, Louisville. I mean, Pitt's kind of the same situation as NC State was last night. Desperate for a win. Could have had two prior to, lost them both. I mean, can you steal one on the road at a tough place like Louisville? So there's so many teams kind of in the same boat right now in the league. You're just looking for some kind of separation.
All right. So of the three tonight, which one feels the biggest?
Oh, they're all big because none of them are named Duke. That's why. And I don't mean that to ride the fence. I mean that because I don't know. I mean, it's kind of like when you do accounting at home and we're going to have to do that again tomorrow. Duke's number one. After that, Wes, I don't know. I had Miami last week. Well, you know, they need to win at home. I mean, you got to beat Syracuse at home. So I think they're all important. I don't think there's a team in the league that can afford just to kind of give away a week and lose two games other than Duke. And I think Duke's a different animal than everybody else. But nobody, I think, is in the comfort zone in this league right now from the men's side. Nobody. None of the other 14.
I would tell you that Syracuse-Miami feels, of those three, Syracuse Miami feels like, you know what? Here's the Orange at 1-1. Miami's 3-0. Syracuse has had a couple postponed. Syracuse needs to, if Syracuse wants to be in the race, I think this is an early season opportunity. They got to bounce back. They had a disappointing loss. I mean, Saturday was a disappointing loss for the Orange, right? Couldn't hit shots. I mean, that ball game tonight at 8 o'clock on ACC Network just feels like it's got a little bit more to it.
Well, the good news for Syracuse is they have been pretty good in the Sunshine State. I mean, they're the team that did go down and beat Florida State and Tallahassee, which nobody in this league's done in a long, long time. Of course, after watching Florida State last night get totally waxed in Switzerland, you kind of wonder where the Noles are too. So, like I said, it's kind of hard to define anybody in this conference right now unless you're in Durham, North Carolina. But, you know, Miami's been terrific at home. Can that trend continue? Louisville, undefeated, will be a heavy favorite tonight against Pittsburgh, even though Pitt, you know, woulda, coulda, shoulda at Virginia. They've had opportunities. Again, the Notre Dame game was a game that kind of slipped away in the second half. I mean, Pitt could be 2-0 just as easy as they're 0-2 in the league. Yeah. So I don't know how you define really anybody yet other than Duke. And that's why I think all of these games are important, because you got to start putting together wins and maybe turn that in from 1 week to two. We're going to find out who can pull that off.
The Packer and Durham Podcast. Here's Mark Packer and Wes Durham.
We've got three conference matchups on the men's side tonight. The ladies take over on Thursday. We had four last night, Mr. Durham, four of them. You had the one call. We talked about NC State's big win on the road. Kind of a desperate situation for both teams. NC State takes care of business. Georgia Tech try to do something with Duke. Good luck with that. The Blue Devils continue to roll at Cameron Indoor. Then we had two other games last night of note. And tell you what, one home team took care of business. The other one did not. It's kind of like the theme in the league so far this year. Can you hold serve?
Yeah, and in the case of Wake Forest, it got really interesting, didn't it? Because the Deacons used a fast start. Another big night from Alondis Williams. Another terrific performance from Jake LaRavia. And all of a sudden, Wake Forest is feeling pretty good about themselves. They win 76-54 last night. Whoa, wait a second. 22-point difference? Well, I got news for you. It floated between, what, Pac 15 and about 24 most of the night, didn't it? It felt like
Well, here's the deal. Wake Forest goes on a 17-0 run in the first half. 17-0. We just talked about the crazy stretches we had in Blacksburg with NC State and at Virginia Tech. But the Deacs go 17-0 run, and they rearview mirrored Florida State. I mean, that was game, set, match. See you later. And, you know, we're so used to watching Florida State, Wes, late, especially the last couple of years. Great three-point shooting team. Last night, 4 of 25 from beyond the arc. 4 of 25. You go walk around shooting 16% from beyond the arc, I'll show you a team that's getting beat. And that was the case last night. But a terrific win for the Deacs, because they had a tough road trip last week, right? Go to Louisville, lost. Went to Miami, lost. There's no shame in losing. Those are two good clubs, two teams that are undefeated in conference play. But Wake really needed to respond at home, and that's exactly what they did last night.
No, I think you're exactly right. I think it's a heck of a boost for Forbes' team in that light. The other part about this, and watching the ball game last night, Alondis Williams and Jake LaRavia are two of those new names in the ACC you're going to need to know as conference play begins in earnest here. I mean, you know, you may have heard bits and pieces of them as you move through December and parts of November and things like that, but they're going to be at the top of the scouting report now. That's just where they're going to be. Davian Williamson is also going to be there. I think Isaiah Musi is certainly. But those two guys in particular, two guys, one was playing in Oklahoma last year, the other one at Indiana State. And they have come in this league and done a terrific job of boosting Wake Forest basketball optimism for sure. And look, let's be honest, Deacons are going to be a factor now. They're playing the type of basketball. They're deep enough packed. They bring bodies off the bench. They've got an inside guy to back up. Dallas Walton's done a nice job, transfer from Colorado. And as we said back in December, Coach Forbes found guys that fit the system. He got the right guys in the portal. How often do we talk about it? You got to get the right people. You got to get the right fits. Now, I don't know how many wins it'll turn into, but their basketball ability, their basketball persona has changed dynamically from where it was a year ago, for sure.
And so is Florida State. So I would say one thing for Florida State fans. You know, the loss at home to Syracuse was kind of a wake-up call. But the good news about this road trip is at least you got a split out of it. You know, you won in Raleigh. That counts. You got to be able to steal on the road. Last night, they were looking to get greedy. Did not happen. But, you know, you can't shoot 24% and you know, like I said, 16% beyond the arc and expect to win a game anywhere, much less on a road. But I was impressed with Wake Forest because, you know, we talked about the strength of schedule or lack thereof to get off to the quick start. And you lose two on the road in the league, and you're like, okay, who are these guys? Not that one game defines you. But I tell you what it does do. It tells you that this team has the ability to bounce back. And, you know, they didn't get down the dumps by losing two in a row on the road. They came home and right from the get-go took total control of the basketball game. So I think if you're Coach Forbes and Wake Forest and your fan base, you watched that game last night and said, okay, we can live with this. This team's got a pulse. They got a chance. And so we'll see where this thing goes moving forward. But that was really important for Wake to hold serve last night.
Do we need to discuss the hat in the old Coliseum last night?
Yes. They have taken this right here and have put it on steroids. Look at that bad boy right there on the front row.
What in the world?
I like it. I wouldn't want to. I don't want to sit behind it, but I like it. I like it from my chair right here. The Demon Deacon hat, man.
Looks like the kind of place you might go to do some sort of show there. Looks like a stage behind it type deal. What do we got?
Yeah, the only thing missing is like something at Citi Field in New York where they hit a home run. That Big Apple pops up. They need something popping out of the hat. Maybe Steve Forbes wearing the Christmas hat. Maybe a character like that would be great. Every time they make a three or something. I don't know, but I like the top hat. I like it.
I'm with you. Nice addition to the Coliseum, right?
Maybe the Deacon can come flying out of there in his motorcycle. That'd be cool, too. Maybe he can do something like the Brewer comes and hits a home run. He goes down the slide. I kind of like what Wake's doing, man. They're thinking out of the box. Kind of like it.
There you go.
Yeah. I like it.
All right, let's go to Clemson. Tigers and Cavaliers meeting for a second consecutive game. And a little different than the first one. Clemson shot the lights out of it at JPJ, and Virginia could not respond in terms of its offense. Last night, Virginia's final kick ended up being the difference in the ball game. Jaden Gardner finished with 25 last night. Virginia shot 54% from the floor. Made 21 of 24 free throws last night, but this was a good ball game. Seven ties, five lead changes in the second half. Before Virginia took the lead for good in the last 7 minutes, Pac.
Yeah, 15 lead changes in the game. A totally different kind of game as opposed to the last one they played. In fact, it was almost kind of the complete reverse. Remember, Virginia went 11 minutes and didn't make a field goal at home. Clemson pulled away, won by double digits. This particular game, Clemson down the stretch goes almost 6 minutes down the stretch. Doesn't make a shot. You mentioned they got outscored 19-8 down the stretch. But for Virginia, this, again, we keep looking for teams that can start piecing together wins. Who is it going to be? Virginia goes to Syracuse over the weekend, makes shots, scores over 70, kind of surprises Syracuse. They go on the road, they get Clemson maybe at the right time. Doesn't matter, it's on the schedule, you got to go play. They make shots, they shot over, 54% from the field. All of a sudden, Virginia making shots, which is totally different than what we saw earlier this year from the Hoos. They always play good D. But if they can make shots, all of a sudden Virginia is the Virginia team we hope to see again, right? So great win for Tony Bennett. And for Clemson, Wes, they've kind of been this enigma all year. You know, they've got leads. They've blown some leads down the stretch. Sometimes you see the good Clemson, and won four in a row. Then you get some stretches where they just can't throw it in the ocean and they lose games. So I think Clemson, just like about, I don't know, another 10 teams in this league, they may emerge as an upper third, upper half team. Maybe they don't.
Right.
I really don't know. It's hard to put your arms around a lot of these teams right now in the conference.
Tigers are one of those teams now where all of a sudden they set out on the road. Next two are on the road in Raleigh this weekend at Notre Dame next week before they get back home for two in Boston College and Pittsburgh. So if you're looking at Clemson here, they are 9-5. They're 1-2 in the ACC, but two of their three games are against Virginia, right? So let's see kind of how this plays out. Pack, I think they're one of those teams, maybe similar to Wake Forest, in that they've got to find some momentum. Some of it has to be more consistent. In Clemson's case, I think they've started to discover the pieces. I think P.J. Hall can have a good year. David Collins, I think, helps them. Nas Bohannon, the two grad transfers, I think are nice fits for what Brownell wants to do. In Virginia's case, we've seen them shoot the ball well, and they've picked up a couple road wins. You know, call me crazy. This league's often been determined by schools that can go have success on the road, right? That usually determines the top half of the league.
That's what, right? I've been saying for how many weeks on this show. Who can steal on the road is going to be so, so important. And, you know, it seems like when you start rattling off what everybody's record is, it sounds like everybody's 9-5, 1-2, 9-5, 2-1. I mean, like I said, I really have no feel other than I know Duke's really, really good, and Miami and Louisville have gotten off to great starts. Everybody else is kind of like, hey, could go any direction. And I really don't know where it's going to go. I really have no feel. The more of these games you watch, you just kind of go, all right, are we going to have you win, I win? Because I told you the other day, that really cannot happen for the league when you start talking about the NCAA tournament. You've got to have separation, Wes, when you start talking about how many teams are going to the NCAA tournament. I don't want to see this conference where you have maybe Duke at 18-2, for argument's sake, and then you've got 10 teams at 11-9, 9-11. That's not going to be helpful for the NCAA tournament.
No.
You've got to see five or six teams jump out, win games, and go, guess what? There's the upper tier, there's whatever's in the glob in the middle, and then there's the lower class. You got to have that for the tournament.
I don't disagree with you. And right now, we got one at the top, and we got a big old glob.
If as of now, like I said, I'd throw Miami and Louisville because I think they get the benefit of the doubt by having a zero in the loss column. But, you know, if you're a Virginia fan, as ugly as some of these games were early in the season where you simply could not score, hey, you're 3-1 in the league. So, you know, that old Tony Bennett can coach him up now. I mean, if they make shots – they're going to be okay. In the last two games, they've made shots.
Packer and Durham. This is the Packer and Durham podcast.
You know, last night was the first public event on the Duke campus, Pack. There have been some classes are beginning, but they're going to begin virtually because of the spike in coronavirus cases. But last night, apparently everything went well from what we understand, but they had folks in the building last night and masked up and all sorts of other requirements being staged there to go to the game at Cameron. But we'll see how that environment changes potentially as we move through the basketball season.
Well, there was not a single place in this league that was affected more with home court advantage than Duke University last year with COVID. When you go to Cameron during COVID and there's nobody in the building and then you walk in there and it's rocking, that's the biggest one end of the spectrum to the other that you can get in this conference when it comes to basketball.
Yep.
Not even close.
Yep. All right. We mentioned this going to break. Who is the most, indispensable player, if you will, Pack, that you could have? The guy who maybe means the most, right? And we're talking to Malik Williams coming up here in a few minutes. And he's one of those guys, certainly for Louisville. His return is critical to the success Chris Mack and the Cardinals are going to have this year. But he's also one of about five or six that if you kind of put some numbers together, you start to realize just their value across the board to their team's success, I think.
Yeah, Malik was on with us yesterday. In case you missed it, you're going to get a replay coming up here momentarily. But I would have put him number one because when he's not playing, when they went to Western Kentucky, that didn't even look like the same club because it wasn't. And there's a number of dudes on this list that you go down here that if you take them off that respective club and what do they look like, well, you see the deal here. But Malik Williams would have been my number one on that list even before I even saw all those numbers.
Yeah, for me, it would have been Baycott at Carolina. I think the names that probably surprised some folks on here, T.J. Bickerstaff at Boston College.
Yeah.
Perhaps Jared West, but I'm telling you now, Jared West, I went back after He did a number defensively on Michael DeVoe the other night. I went back and started looking at Jared West's numbers just to kind of get a feel for his season. And tell you what, when he plays well, Louisville plays well. I mean, the Marshall transfers come in and done a really, really terrific job of kind of stabilizing that backcourt. But there's some familiar names on there. I think we probably could have put Reese Beekman on there. You might have guessed Beekman, might have guessed Baycott. John Hewley of Pitt's an interesting name on that roster, too.
Yeah, there's no question. But, you know, we'll have Luke Hancock coming up here at the top of the hour. We can probably explore this topic with him even further because I think Louisville is an interesting case study. And, you mm-hmm. know, I say this all the time. Louisville needs to be good for our league. Has to be good. It's a great basketball mm-hmm. state. They love their hoops. They support it. It's a great environment, whether they're talking about women's games, men's games. It's kind of like when I talk about football that Florida State, Miami, Virginia Tech need to be good for our conference. Louisville needs to be good for the ACC. Has to be. So getting Malik Williams back makes a world of difference. And if you watch the Cards without him, I think you know what I'm talking about. But as you mentioned, Wes, there are other guys that come to mind. And I keep thinking about teams that have gotten off to a good start. And to me, one of the most interesting teams is Miami. You know, because the first thing you think of is, oh, they got Wong. He's an all-world player, preseason, first-team All-ACC, all that stuff. And look how many guys have contributed to their team. It's kind of fascinating to watch, you know, who has stepped up in the early part of this year. And to me, I think Miami's an interesting case study. I mean, McGusty's been out of sight, too. Seems like every night there's somebody else stepping up other than the guy you think it's going to be, right? They're kind of an interesting team.
No, I totally agree with that. I think in the other part about it that you find fascinating is the way that you talk about Cam McGusty. He would have been the one that I would have thought would have ended up on this list. I mentioned last in our visit with Jim Larrañaga, I think McGusty's scoring surplus has been a really, really good thing for Miami to complement Isaiah Wong. The other school that I thought we might see somebody on this list from is Syracuse, and we didn't see anybody in our top seven from Syracuse. The two players from Louisville, though, probably surprise a lot of people. Williams does not. I think West, as I said a moment ago, is the guy that catches your eye. Baycott at Carolina, to me, is the easy one. I think when Armando Baycott is on the floor, North Carolina is significantly better as a basketball team, and he has embraced, I think, the role that is going to be required for that basketball team to be successful. Not just the double-double, and that's nearly a given. But look at the field goal percentage number, Pac. I mean, now that's not Brad Daugherty, Bobby Jones stuff, but it's still pretty good for Armando Baycott.
No, I agree with that. You know, the other guy who had a big night last night was Gardner from Virginia. He had 23 against the Tigers last night. And until Virginia's last two games where they've really shot the ball well, they've just had a hard time scoring. But he's been one of those kind of guys that you know, if you've been watching Virginia from afar, you see that name pop up, and if you go, well, who's this Gardner guy? Where'd they get him? Again, you start talking about the transfer portal and the impact it's had on ACC teams. To me, that'd be another guy that comes to mind that, you know what, you see him on a consistent standpoint that, hey, he's putting up really, really good numbers. You take him off that Virginia team, especially prior to the last two, I mean, they really, really struggle.
Yeah, no, you're right about that. And I think that Jaden Gardner is a guy who can do a lot for them, 20-plus last night. But I think he's also a pretty good rebounder, too.
Yeah.
And I think in some ways, you know, Caden Shedrick takes such a big piece of their inside game. I mean, you had Jay Huff in the past. You had Mamadi Diakite. You've had all those guys. Shedrick taking on this role, and I think he's a really good athlete, but you got to have somebody else to help him while he kind of gets acclimated to that role, if you will. And I think Gardner's the guy for Virginia that has been able to do that. But look, Kihei Clark and Reese Beekman ultimately determine where Virginia goes. Beekman may be on that list too, and he is, but I think that when you start looking at Kihei Clark's value, in fact, Josh Pastner mentioned it to us yesterday in our production call, Pac. Kihei Clark's value should never be underestimated just simply because of his experience level at this point.
Exactly right. You know, the other thing that will be fun to watch for that original list that we just put on the screen is does it continue, right? I mean, this is still a small snapshot of basically everybody playing three or four conference games for the most part. But as we get in a couple weeks down the road, we get into late January, It'll be interesting to see how that list of the top seven or eight, does it stay the same, or are there adjustments, or is there somebody else that gets hot? It's kind of like the teams we keep talking about. Who is going to go on a run in this league, whether it be an individual standpoint or a team standpoint? To me, it's the most interesting aspect right now of ACC men's basketball because of Duke's dominance, and we just don't know about the rest.
Well, let's throw that list back up there real quick if we can, Josh and Jen, because here's the other thing. We talk about certain players in this league guiding their teams early in the season, and we're doing it here in conference play. Now, this is the top seven when they're on the court versus off the court and their team differential, okay? But there's one guy who is central to his team's success, and they won last night, and he's not in the top seven. In fact, he's not in the top 10. But yet, I would argue that possession to possession, Darion Sebron is having as much impact as anybody else, Mark, in the success of NC State. But he's not one of these guys that clicks this particular analytic, if you will.
That would be true. But, you know, NC State's got pieces, though, right? I mean, we've talked about Smith. We talked about, you know, Helms can get hot. NC State has interesting pieces. The key is going to be, can they come together? And then a guy like Alondis Williams, who we've talked about at times, who could be so unbelievably explosive. That would be another name that's not on that top seven list. And if Wake Forest continues to play well and win games, that will tell me that Alondis Williams is having just a monster year. Again, a small snapshot, but something worth keeping an eye on as we move through the month of January.
Here's Mark Packer and Wes Durham.
Packer and Durham. We're just talking about guys you just got to have on the floor. Number one on our list there was Malik Williams, Wes. We had a good conversation with him yesterday.
Sure did. Veteran guy, been around, seen a lot of basketball at Louisville, a lot of ups and a lot of downs, but we started our visit yesterday with Malik by saying, okay, just give us your thoughts on where this season is right now ahead of the big home game tonight against Pittsburgh.
You know, this team has a lot of growth to make, and we got to continue to grow. But, you know, looking back at November, you know, I believe that we're a way different team than we were. So, you know, it's about that and continuing to get better each and every day, you know, and taking those steps forward and, you know, not having a bunch of steps back. You can take 3 steps forward, and if you're going to keep taking 2 steps back, then, you know, there's never really any growth. So, you know, we got to keep on that right path of growth. So this group is good, but, you know, we got to put it all together and for stretches, longer stretches.
Malik, speaking of getting better every day, when you decided to say, guess what, I'm coming back for some more, what did you work on in the offseason that you realized, hey, I've got to personally get better for the 21-22 season in what department or departments? What did you work on?
The biggest thing was getting healthy. I had to get healthy. So, you know, for my entire summer, you know, leading up to August, once everybody returned to school, I didn't really get to practice with the team until then. So before that, it was just about getting healthy and what can I do best so that I stay healthy throughout the remainder of the season. And that was the main thing for me. But then after that, just becoming a better overall leader, becoming a better overall shooter, just being more consistent, being a very high IQ guy, and, you know, somebody who we can rely on both ends of the floor, whether it's taking care of the ball or, you know, anchoring the defense.
What makes a better leader? Where did you look to become a better leader? Did you read something? Did you listen to other teammates? Did you pick up on maybe something you saw in the NBA, maybe some buddies, maybe a coaching staff? Just curious.
That's a lot of things, and it starts with yourself. You got to be an everyday guy, and, you know, guys got to look at you, and they got to be able to believe and trust in the words that you're saying, and they got to know that your intentions are good. But, you know, watching Jared this summer and the way that he carried himself and the way that he led our team, you know, while I was out on the sideline was really big for me just because, you know, the confidence that he had, the voice that he had, and, you know, him coming in being an everyday guy was really good for me just getting back in my real role. Like, you know, I got to be there with him so that we can lead the team together.
Malik, you've been, I mean, I'm not saying you're an old guy, but you're kind of an old guy. I mean, you've been around a while. It's one of those things that Yeah, I mean, it's okay. In this case, I think especially when we're talking about this, and you mentioned Jared West. That's a guy who transferred in. Carlick Jones last year. That's a guy who transferred in, was a great leader for you guys. But you also played with guys like Donovan. You've been around the program as Harold arrived and things like that. I mean, you've been around a long time. You understand kind of the Louisville standard and all the intangibles with it. I think that gives you a really unique advantage for Coach Mack.
It does, you know, because I understand the culture that Louisville had, you know, before this new coaching staff came in. So just trying to continue to instill that within the program and, you know, keep that same heritage and, you know, keep that same culture around. And because, I mean, they were great. The Louisville before was great. You know, we're going to be great now. It's just taking time for us to, you know, really get that back. But that was huge for me. And as you said, the guys that I got to play with, you know, my first year, Quinn Snyder, you know, Honest, yeah. Ray Spalding, and, you know, guys like Dan Goodell, you know, that was really good for me just watching how they carry themselves and the way that they play. Even when, you know, the bad thing would happen in our season, we all stuck with it, and, you know, we believed in ourselves. So, you know, Kristen Cunningham was also a really great leader for me. He came in my first year that Coach Mack got here, and, you know, he was great. He was a great leader, and I learned a lot from him on and off the court, so.
Lake, I know that you're only worried about Pittsburgh because they're next and they're tomorrow night. But have you spent any time looking around the rest of the league? I'm just always interested how a student athlete looks at the league versus what Wes and I do each and every day. Do you pay attention to anybody else, or is it just, hey, next game, that's all I'm worried about? And if you have looked around the league, what have you seen so far?
For me personally, I'm a guy who stays in the moment and I'm getting ready for Pitt, so for sure I don't look too far ahead until a few days before the game of the opponent that we're about to face. So I would say I stick in that moment, but I have looked around the league. You know, I watch college basketball, but it's talented. I think not only in our league, but all over college basketball, it's the most talented that I've seen, you know, a lot of teams this year. So it's always going to be a challenge every night, but I would say that we got some powerhouses in our league for sure, but also that our league is wide open.
Yeah, no question about that. To me, that made even Sunday night's win in Atlanta feel big for you guys. I know Georgia Tech's coming off a pause. You guys have been trying to build some momentum. You had the great win against Wake Forest earlier last week at home. To go on the road and get that win for this team right now, Malik, how important did that feel?
It was huge. It feels very important. And I think that we got that chip on our shoulder now, and, you know, we understand that every night we got to bring it because, you know, this league, you know, college basketball in general, like, we got to go. So I would say that it was really good for us to go get a road win. We've been in two hostile environments on the road, and, you know, we lost two of those games. And it was big for us to get our fourth road kill of the year.
Malik, man, we didn't get the Kentucky game. What are we going to do with that? I mean, Louisville, Kentucky, we got to play that game somewhere, don't we? I mean, somebody's got to be open on a Tuesday night. Let's get together and
we got to squeeze that in.
We got to play that game, Malik. I mean, you got to have some pull, man. You've been there long enough. You got to make that happen.
No doubt. And, you know, I'm ready for the challenge, and we're ready. So whenever we can make that happen, let's do it.
That had to be a bummer, though, right? I mean, goodness gracious. I mean, you're going to lose a game. Don't lose. Let's not lose that game, right? I mean, that's just one of those special deals.
Yeah, it was terrible timing. You know, all around the country, we're dealing with that, the protocols of health and safety. So, you know, we got to do what we got to do. But it was a real bummer to lose that game because, you know, none of us over here wanted to lose it. And I'm sure they still want to play it. So whatever we got to do to make it happen, let's do it.
Can't worry about Kentucky anymore, though. It's all about Pittsburgh tonight for the Cardinals as they try to stay undefeated in ACC play.
Yeah, good one tonight. By the way, we welcome Randolph Childress to the ESPN college basketball family tonight. He'll be on the call of the ball game at Louisville. How about that, huh? One of the great scorers in ACC history. Looking forward to hearing his comments tonight with Mike Cousins.
Part of the ACC family. Tradition, history, basketball lineage runs deep in this league now. Seriously, D.
The Packer and Durham Podcast.